Today I'm with Georgette Greenwood, the Executive Director at Our Lady of Angels Maternity Shelter in Temple. Georgette has been the Executive Director here for about 2.5 years, and it's my honor to welcome you to another edition of Hometown Heroes. I know you want to talk about the shelter and all the great things you're doing here, but our listeners need to know more about you. A little bit about, you know, where you grew up and where you went to school and...
Well, you're correct. I don't want to talk about myself, but I was born and raised in a little town in Louisiana that I doubt anybody has heard of unless you get probably 30 miles before you enter it, but it's called Lake Providence, Louisiana. That's where everything started. So what I do and who I am now, it really came from there. So I had a wonderful childhood. That's where I learned to love and I learned to serve. I learned the importance and the power of village, because that was a place where, you know, everybody looked after everybody. They knew everybody. You know, my high school principal went to school with my mom, and, you know, you already had expectations and people know who you were from, and you just didn't get much wiggle room, which was a good thing because it was really a village and everybody kind of looked out for you. I wouldn't have changed anything. You know, the teachers were a part of it. I'm from an era where, you know, tutoring was you going to your teacher's house and them helping you and really being involved in what you were doing. So when I was in high school, my family relocated to Texas. I threw a fit. I was insistent that I was not coming. I only had one more year and I was ready to graduate with the people I had been. But my mother, you know, wanted a better opportunity for us. Like I said, it was a small town. And so she really wanted to give us an opportunity to different. And it just happened to be when I was about to graduate. So I came, but I did miss everything in my you know, in my community. But I was safe and it was a new experience. And so I had to adjust. I had a foundation in God and in love and in family.
That's great. I love the community and the village, yeah. that concept. And I want to talk more about that here in a minute. But what got you into this profession of really focused on helping and making other people's lives so much better?
100% God. You know, I had a different plan for my life. I was on my way while I was at UT. I got a couple scholarships to UT, and I was a mechanical engineer major. And, you know, I'd been participating in summer engineering programs and doing work with in a management program to work, and God kind of interrupted that. I went to a revival one night with some friends, and I'd heard a lot about it, and so I was apprehensive and saying, you know, what I was not going to allow, and me and my Bible, we went in, and, you know, I was just not hearing, I wasn't going to hear what this, you know, preacher had to say. I didn't think he was on, and he asked us to come down, and preacher laid hands on us, and I was apprehensive about that because I had never experienced it, but in the midst of that, you know, he told me, you know, that the Lord was telling him that I was going to work with people. And in my fashion, I talked back and said, no, I'm not. And he said, no, the Lord is telling me you're going to work with people who are in prison. And I was like, absolutely not. I'm not going. And he said, prison in their heart, you know, not physically. And your humor, you'll lighten a lot of loads. And I just left thinking, you crazy, and that's not happening. And I was sitting somewhere on the steps of Jester, and someone walked up to me, and we struck up a conversation, and they started talking and talked about this profession called social work. I'd never heard of it. And I became really intrigued about it, and I wanted to know more. So I looked into it and went to the college and visited the dean and talked to the college. And when I left, I was crying, and I was like, oh God, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so very emotional, but I kept hiding for a while, and I was too far, and I was about to graduate, and I didn't want to switch. So later on, my mother was sick, and I told my mother, hey, God is telling me to switch majors. And my mom told me, you know, you have to listen, and, you know, you do what God is saying, because he knows what's best. And I told her how excited I was about it, but how scared I was of it. And so finally I made that change. And I went to my first social work class, psychology class, sociology class, and sat way in the back with some glasses on in disguise. And, ended up crying the whole thing because I knew that's where I was supposed to be.
There's the old adage that if you want to make God laugh, tell him what your plans are, right?
Exactly. And I held on to it too, you know. I held on to it because even I was supposed to start a job at GE, and I was supposed to start this job at a small nonprofit. And I prayed and prayed and prayed, and a friend of mine, we spent the whole weekend praying, and I kept saying, "What is God telling you?" And she says, "He's telling me you should take this job at this nonprofit." I said, "Okay, you can't hear good, so I'm not going to listen to you." And I never turned it down. I ended up at the job at the nonprofit, calling the other job, saying, "Hey, I'm not going to take it." And since then, I knew it wasn't the money that I wanted or the direction, but I knew if I did what God said do, that He would take care of me. And true to His nature, He's done just that. So He's blessed me. And like I said, it'll be 31 years in September. And I've never wanted for anything. He's always provided. And I just keep doing what He says to.
That's a great mentality. So how did you get here into Our Lady of Angels in Temple?
That was God again. I don't even remember applying for the job. It was that, again, I had another plan. I was ready. I had done enough service and not made money and not had a savings, and I was ready to do different. I've been blessed with two small children, and I was just ready to go do me. And Gwen Petter came, and she called, and she went on vacation, and she came back, and she called again, and she just wouldn't leave me alone. And I just told her, I said, "Listen, I've got this other job offer. I can make this money, have this, do this, do that." And I said, "But He is just not letting me go." I said, "So I'm going to take this job." And as soon as I did that, it was like I was in a field running, and, you know, with lilies and flowers and everything. And I was like, "Oh, I'm supposed to do it." So I drive 2 hours, you know, 1 hour here, 1 hour back to work. And it's what I'm supposed to do. And I've known that since the day I walked in.
Let's talk about Our Lady of Angels Maternity Shelter. What does the shelter provide?
So Our Lady of Angels Maternity Shelter is a homeless maternity facility for pregnant women and their children who a pregnancy has turned into an unexpected crisis. And they're homeless and don't have a place to go. And so that is what it's for. And that's who we work with and help.
Can you get into some specifics about what a young lady and her little children might be able to get when they come here at the shelter?
So what OLUMS does that's very important is the first thing that we do is that we interrupt the pattern. We interrupt the crises. We're there to stabilize them. You have a lot of women who come here and they have experienced trauma in some form or fashion. And most of the time, they're still stuck in that trauma. They're still stuck in that tragedy. You know, as a teenager, you know, women have come and they've been out of the home since they were 14 years old. Or they didn't have a mom or had a mom who was on drugs or saw somebody commit suicide in a family. They've experienced domestic violence, all of this different trauma. And so the first thing to do is to interrupt that crisis and to listen and to find out what their story is, what they're experiencing. It's not just about giving them a safe place to stay. We have beautiful bedrooms. I'm so proud of this shelter because you walk in and it's home, you know, but that's wonderful. They go in their room and it's like they're totally, you know, taken aback because they don't expect it to be as nice as it is. But after that, what's most important is getting down to, we got some women in this facility who've been traumatized in one way or the other, 100% of them. They have mental health issues that have either gone untreated or haven't even been recognized. And so, you know, we're here physically to give them a bed, to give them safety, to give them security, but we're here to find out what the problem is and how we do that. So some of the things that we've been able to do since I've started is take it a step farther. We provide the housing. Now let's provide the mental health. So we brought a clinician on, and Annie has come on and she has just transformed this because we're able to talk to those women and find out exactly what's going on to help them deal with these traumas, because it's so important that they understand that now I'm a mom or now I'm about to be a mom. And what I tell them all the time is their child is as good as the mom and the resources that she has. That's really what they have. If you have a mother who is beaten, neglected, abandoned, has no self-worth, thinks she's worth nothing, she doesn't have anything to offer, she just wants to have this baby so she can get back on drugs or do whatever. If that's what you have, that's what you give that child. And so the first thing we have to do is tell them how worthy they are, how blessed they are. You know, God bless them. They have life. He's the only somebody who gives life, and he doesn't make mistakes. And so it's on you to be worthy of this gift that he's given you. So get yourself together. Whatever the problem is, whatever your past traumas are, whatever your hangups are, you're at a place right now that you might not ever be at again. You have a group of people who are here because we sincerely believe that you are worthy and your child is worthy and y'all both deserve the best. So let's put all the other excuses, put all of that behind us. Let's work on whatever it takes to get us healthy so that we can have healthy children, so that we can then be a part of society and produce some kids who are strong, who are healthy, who have a good mindset, who understand education, and who are ready to keep that going and break this cycle that their moms came in. And that's what I see us, and that's what anybody who comes here, I tell them, this is either going to be your biggest blessing or you just made the biggest mistake, because you're going to walk out on all these resources that we're providing for you. And so they come here expecting a place to stay in an emergency, but the beautiful thing about it is we started an aftercare program. So we follow these women for 3 years. And so we're not just going to dip in and say, okay, you're fixed now, but we're going to actually walk with them and make sure that you're better and that you keep getting better and that you start having big dreams, and then we help you fulfill those dreams so that you can pass some healthy stuff on to your family.
And I want to kind of highlight again that you talked about the aftercare. What do you mean?
So we started an aftercare program because this is an emergency facility. So, you know, we kind of move quick and do things, but we work with the women. And so one of the things we do is once they are ready to discharge, the aftercare program then takes on. And they continue to, they'll move in their apartment or in their home or wherever it is that they're going, but we follow them. So we still go into the communities, we go into the home. And so if we're talking about making a house and what you need to put in a house and how you need to clean a house and not how you need to buy groceries and what you need to put in the groceries and what's, you know, healthy meals, we started some of that stuff at the shelter, but we can actually physically do that with them in their own community. So we teach them, we continue to teach them those things. They still continue to participate in counseling. So it's ongoing because, you know, you can't fix a problem in 90 days that's been going on for years. And so they have an opportunity to continue with that. We continue with case management. We still continue to help them. If they don't have a car, you know, we're wanting them to be self-independent. And you want to show them the services and how to get on the bus, and you catch the bus here and you do that. Or if you're looking at, you know, getting a job, you know, how much to save, this is how you get a car, those kinds of things. So we continue working and providing those services to them. And we can do that for the next 3 years. So we do that with aftercare. We still help them with materials assistance. So diapers, mm-hmm. wipes. You know, whatever it is that they might need for their child that we have. If the child is in daycare, we help provide diapers for the daycare because, you know, you have to provide that mm-hmm. and for themselves. And so we keep walking with them. I don't want to just give them a bunch of information when they're here. I've interrupted this crisis, but I want to make good on it. Yeah. I want to keep working with them, and I keep following with them and keep them dreaming. You know, we have a young lady who's in our aftercare program who came here, and she is in school, and she wants to be a veterinarian. And so she's interning at this veterinarian stop. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have a doctor on our hand at some point in time.
That's
and
fabulous.
We're part of that. You know, we're part of, if you listen to her story, you know, she was somebody who was in incarcerated for a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but she came from She was adopted. She came from a mom. You know, when she called us, you could actually hear her mom on the phone, you know, cussing her out and telling mm-hmm. she was going to get her if she didn't get these drugs for her. And she's pregnant, and she's just like, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. And she came in, and I'm telling you, she is stellar. And she works. She has her son in daycare. She goes to school. But what she says to me on a regular is she keeps learning more about herself and more who she is, and that she's actually worthy, and that she has something to give her child, and that she has something to give back to society. And that's what her whole goal is, and she's working on it. So we do that, and we're walking with her. So we help her get into Temple. We help do her, you know, student aid and different things like that. We pitch in where we can if she's short or things like that. So that's aftercare. We keep walking. They know what she says is, I know if I have anything that come up and I don't know what to do, I call here. And the first thing everybody's going to tell me is, first of all, breathe. Now, let's figure this out. And so she's learning how to handle her problems and handle things. And but she has this big desire, mm-hmm. and I think she's totally capable of being a doctor. I said, just remember us when you're there. I don't know if I have a pet by that time, but I'm going to get one just to bring them to you. So, yeah, you know, that's what we're trying to do. So that's aftercare.
So it's a lot about changing a lifestyle for a lot of these young women.
100%, Tom. Yeah. Changing a lifestyle. Yeah. When you show somebody they're worthy, you know, one of the young ladies said to me, she came here in handcuffs, escorted by a jailer and 19, pregnant, but was a victim of human trafficking, and found out she was pregnant in jail. They found out and they reached out to us, and it was like, sure, we'll take her. And, you know, she came in and we worked with her, and, you know, I asked her, can I tell your story? And she said, yes. And she said, but what would you want to say about me? I'm from a mother. I was born in a halfway house. To a mother who was addicted. I was put with family. I was abused. I was then, you know, trafficked. I was put on drugs so that they could move me, keep us quiet. Got out because we got arrested, and then I found out I'm pregnant. But I was like, but since you've been here, you've not used. You go to meetings regularly. You're in school to get your GED. She was doing GED through Temple College. You're getting tutoring. You're so good at math. You are so positive. I said, you are a success. And she said, I have never heard success and my name in the same sentence. And it's like, you're a success. And she still is doing wonderful.
That's awesome.
She is so awesome. She works. She has her place. She has a car. She is so awesome. So that's what we do. And that I won't accept anything less. That's what we are. And so we can do that. So we're changing a mentality. We're changing a life. And we're interrupting all of this trauma and this different stuff that these women have been in. And we're hoping, my goal is to have happy, healthy families, but that are productive, contributing citizens of their community.
So I know that 2020 and the pandemic have just impacted everybody. So I'm interested to know how you have worked, or how you've mitigated all the restrictions that have been placed on all of us and dealt with the vast unknowns associated with this virus.
So COVID, it was a big thing for us. We were scared. I, in particular, I was scared, you know, and as the captain of the shift, I couldn't find anything. I was just scared and I didn't know what to do. And I went to the board and, you know, we talked about, hey, I think we may need to slow down for a minute. And how do we do? What do we do? And so we were kind of scrambling. But after we prayed and we thought about it, COVID really forced us to, it helped us figure out who we really were. Mm-hmm. We started a program early in the pandemic, and we called it COVID Can't Cancel Compassion. And we jumped on that. You know, one of the staff came up with that. One of our staff named Daryl, and she was like, and it became a ministry. So we were a shelter, but we were this ministry. We had prayed. We got leadership. You know, the board stood by us. They said, do what you have to do. We got ourselves back together. And then this COVID Can Counsel Compassion became our ministry. And the first thing we did was we said, everybody in the community is hurting. They're scared. They're going through things. People have lost jobs. People can't provide for the families the way they used to do. What can we do? What do we already do, or what can we start that would help? And so we started these diaper days. And the diaper days were where anybody could call who had a child under 36 months of age. And we were giving out the kitchen sink, Tom. We were doing not only diapers, wipes, we were doing toothpaste, toothbrush, deodorant, shampoo, lotion, cribs, bath, the little tubs for the bath. We were doing strollers. We were doing anything that you could think of that was related to kids and moms and clothes and things like that. And all they had to do was register and come through. And we, the board and all of us came up, we masked and we gave out food, stuff to make spaghetti. We gave out hot dogs to them when they had been in line and just different things. And we offered to be there. And we did that in several different places. We even worked with Christ the King. We did it with them. We partnered with the city of the health department, both here in Temple and in Killeen. And we served over 420 new families in the community. The blessing is that they got an opportunity to see us giving back. We already do that regularly. We have a pantry program, a community outreach program, where they can call and ask for those things. But we just open it up to the whole community. We put it on Facebook. We told people. We had people doing lives, all kind of stuff. And we end up in that period of time just serving, like I said, over 420 new clients and doing that. And what we continued to hear back was, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And we had people calling who weren't the normal. It was, I'm married. Yes, I have a college education, but I lost my job or this happened. And so we began to do that. We offered help if you had if you were suffering from some mental health or you needed different services. We offered those services to the community. And it was a really good thing. So it just made us buckle down and we were like, we're not going to be scared. God is in control. He got this. We got him, so we're going to move. And that's what we did. And so that program, it's still going on, but during the pandemic and in the throes of it, it was massive. Mm-hmm. And the board kept showing up and we had, line cars around the corner. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a blessing to see. So COVID, it did freak us out for a minute, but in the end, God, like he does with everything, he blessed the people and he blessed us. So we were able to do that. And the other part of it is we started doing additional programs that we hadn't been doing. One of the programs we started was a parenting education program where we were able to get digital and we were able to offer parenting and pregnancy classes online to the community. We did another program and we're still doing that where we offer case management to anybody in the community because we realized that people may have a place to stay, but they may have some of the same issues that the women coming here with now. So we started 3 or 4 programs during COVID. Wow. So that's kind of what we did. And I'm blessed by it. And I think we did wonderful. I'm proud of us.
Wow. I like the COVID Can't Cancel Compassion. That's beautiful. As we start, the state of Texas and the Central Texas, greater family, we start coming out of some of this and a little bit of transition. Where do you see the shelter going? What's the future hold for the shelter? You got expansion plans or, other programs?
We've actually been talking about expansion. We get a lot of calls for shelter, and just due to the limitations of what we can provide as far as bedding and things, we have to turn women away in that really hurts. So yes, the board has been talking about and we're looking at the idea of expansion and we're even talking with the city on how we may be able to partner to do some things in that direction. So we're definitely talking about there. Programming wise, we are looking at doing transitional housing because we find a lot of our women aren't eligible for the normal housing route and have problems, but we still need to have them somewhere safe. So we're actually looking at doing services where we get duplex, fourplex, and actually have a place where we can actually house our women and continue to just help them grow until they can get into permanency housing, you know, get a job and have some income and then be able to move into that route. So we're looking at that. And the other thing that I have, that's my dream, is I'd love for us to have a daycare. We work, we have babies, and it would just be so neat to be able to, you know, continue and work with the children in a way that's special. A lot of our programming is centered around the moms, but one of the things that we're doing, one of our clinicians, is her passion is kids, and so play therapy, and she has all these neat things that she does with the children, and so we're looking at trying to offer more services directly, you know, to the children.
And you mentioned the facility here itself, and you know, it's kind of an older part of Temple. How do you mitigate, or how do you reassure some of these girls and young mothers that are coming from some pretty violent backgrounds that this is a secure place for them?
Well, one of the things we do is we're honest. You know, the first thing I do is I tell, if I'm talking to anybody who has a drug problem or anything, like you said, that have been in those violent situations, is I tell them, you know, where we're located at, and that can be challenging in itself. But one of the things that we're open about is we transport. You know, we're blessed right now. We got a couple of vehicles through one of our funding sources, ER Carpenter. We were able to buy some, and we do a lot of transportation, and that's okay. And we specifically do that because we don't want them walking in the neighborhood, you know what I mean? So that they are safe. And so we do transportation. We're not offended by that at all. That's a part of what we do. So, but we let them know, and we're really vigilant, and we're really aware. And we pay attention to where we are. We have a wonderful relationship with Salvation Army. I mean, totally tops. And one of their directors, Ebony Freeman, if we have anybody who's hanging around and not doing stuff, first thing, she's called me. And she will be out that building quick, and she will tell them, no, you cannot be here, you cannot stand here, you cannot do this. She puts a stop to it really quick, and she lets them know. And so that's totally, totally good for us. And that's one of the ways we help keep them safe. But, you know, we do stuff with Feed My Sheep, but we'll take them. You know, we'll drive like 2-3 blocks down so that they don't have to go through a barrage of people, you know, on the streets.
That's that village mentality that you grew up with, and that sense of community. I think that's just absolutely beautiful how it's all come kind of full circle for you. So what can I do to help the shelter? You know, can I donate my gently used baby items and things like that?
Most definitely. As the vaccines are distributed and as the COVID positivity rate decreases, we hope we can return to using our volunteers and accepting more donations. Right now, we're limiting our donations to hard, non-porous surfaces just for safety. Of course, we always accept diapers, wipes, and hygiene products. That's how we're able to bless the community, because we are able to give stuff away because we've been blessed with it. So we very seldom have to come out of pocket. So the community has totally backed us, and that has continued through COVID. It slowed down a little bit, of course, and you know, we've had to vary a little bit on what we take. But as things get back, yeah, we'll definitely do that. And then we also have people are able to donate to the shelter, of course, and we also have an Amazon Smile account.
How can I find out how I can donate? You got information on your website?
Yeah, you can always call the facility. We're 24 hours, 7 days a week. So if you call, somebody's going to answer. Our phone number is 254-742-2340. We're on Facebook. And we also have our website, ladyoftheangels.org. And you can donate through that on our website or even through PayPal. We're totally not offended by any way you want to give. We can figure it out.
And the website again?
LadyOfTheAngels.org.
LadyOfTheAngels.org. Important effort that you're leading here. And again, I know you don't like to talk about yourself, and I can respect that. And I know that a lot of other people around here can respect that. But you are in charge of a very important facility that I think more people need to know about. This shelter and the great work that you've done. You know, you mentioned the 420 people that you helped this summer. That 420 people is going to turn to 40,000 people really, really soon. And that the impact of that is just, it really blows my mind. And I love what you guys are doing. I look forward to a great partnership with the shelter and the radio station for years and years to come. And I want to thank you for being part of our hometown heroes. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
We appreciate it, and we're excited to be a part of the hometown heroes. So thank you so again.